From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever in the world's time zones you may be, each and every one covered like a blanket by this program, Midnight in the Desert. By the way, it's been suggested that we use for Halloween, Mid-Fright in the Desert. So that was kind of cute. Mid-Fright in the Desert. I like it. All right, anyway, rules for the show, simple and sweet, no bad language, and only one call per show, and I have breaking news. And I do not frequently ever say I have breaking news, but I do. On other networks, breaking news is used to indicate an anchor who stubbed his toe these days. This is breaking news. What I'm going to read you first is from The Independent, and we're going to talk a little bit about what it may mean. A very large cluster of objects in space looked like something that you would expect from an alien civilization. That is according to astronomers. Jason Wright is an astronomer from Penn State University. And he is set to publish a report on a bizarre star system suggesting that the objects he's seeing could be, prepare yourself, could be a swarm of megastructures, according to the report. I was fascinated by how crazy it looked, Wright told The Atlantic. Aliens should always be the very last hypothesis you even consider, but this looked like something you would expect an alien civilization to build. The snappily named KIC 8462852 star lies just above the Milky Way between the constellation Cygnus and Lyra. It first attracted the attention of astronomers way back in 2009 when the Kepler Space Telescope identified it as a candidate for having orbiting Earth-like planets. But this star was emitting a stranger light pattern than any of the other stars in Kepler's search for habitable planets. Tabitha Boyajian, a postdoc at Yale, told The Atlantic, "We'd never seen anything like this star. It was really weird. We thought it might be at first bad data or movement on the spacecraft, but everything checked out, and that includes dust." Well, all right, so I read this, and I picked up the phone, and I've called Seth Shostak right away. And he is at home, ill, lying in bed, with a fever. Just got back from the Far East. And you cannot take a trip like that without coming down with a fever. But he said, trust me, the Allen Array telescopes will be on this in the morning. Now, let me go forward and tell you this is beginning to break everywhere. The Anomalist, bless their heart, they caught it too. Here's what they said. We here at The Anomalist all agree that this may just be the biggest anomalous story of the year. And this quote nearly explains why. Aliens should always be the last hypothesis you consider, but this looked like something you'd expect an alien civilization to build. A Penn State University astronomer, Jason Wright, said that after reviewing evidence of a very strange light pattern originating from an even stranger mess of objects swirling around a distant star, it's caught the attention of SETI and several notable researchers from Yale and Berkeley. They're going to take a very much closer look and listen to what might be there. So, this is not a UFO landing on the White House lawn, but I want you to consider the implications of what they're saying. What they're saying is they think that what they're seeing and the light interruption that they're detecting means megastructures, alien megastructures. So if this is not in the genre that I dispense on a nightly basis, breaking news, I have no idea what would be. This thing is 1,500 light years away from us, folks. If you want to know about it, go check it out yourself. In fact, how did the anomalous finish up their story? They said, this may be our first glance at evidence of intelligent life beyond our own planet, and quoting here, it's quietly sneaking past, buried under celebrity news and presidential debate coverage in mainstream media. And they're right. You know, Don Lemon on CNN had some kind of panel on. To me, this is first class, come to attention, get your brain working, big time breaking news. Now, what would be the kind of civilization that could build what they're observing? Structures that could blink out the light of a star. We're talking type 3 here, I would think. Type 3 civilization. To build those kind of mega structures, blink out the light of a star, they're sure it's not something else. So, it begs all kinds of questions. For example, do we want to be in contact with a type 3 civilization? Maybe not. Maybe that would be really, really, really dangerous. Right? So, we have a lot to think about. Certainly, you can look this story up yourself. It is now appearing all over the place. It will slowly, I'm sure, make its way to the mainstream media. You know, at first, I expect it will come as probably a crawl at the bottom of the CNN screen, maybe by tomorrow morning. And then, who knows, it could escalate into an actual story by afternoon. Or it could be another month or two. But the way this is building tells me, look out, here it comes. This is the one. Kind of glad I've been on the air long enough to bring that kind of news to you. Whether it turns out one way or the other, it is a legitimate story suggesting we have found what appears to be alien structures. At 1,500 light years away? Really? Okay, in other far less interesting news, Hillary Rodham Clinton's polished performance in the first Democrat debate did more than send a message to her primary rivals. It was a warning to the chaotic Republican field about, look out, here comes Hillary. Hundreds of Iranian troops are being deployed in northern and central Syria. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Iranian troops, hundreds of them, in Syria now. Dramatically escalating Tehran's involvement in the civil war as they join allied Hezbollah fighters in the ambitious offensive to wrest key areas from rebels amid Russian airstrikes. What a mess. Maybe we do need these guys from 1,500 light years out, huh? Every other day, another Republican lawmaker seems to wake up and decide that he or she may run to be leader. They still don't have a leader. They're still all hoping, kind of, that Orion will take it, but he's hiding away, deciding, having his arm twisted again and again. So, in my career, rarely have I had the opportunity to break such news to an audience, but imagine it. 1,500 light years away. Structures big enough to obscure the light of a star in an irregular pattern. So that people who have studied this at universities are prepared to say they think this may be alien life. Now, at 1,500 light years away, assuming that the speed of light thing holds, they can't get here very quickly. But if they're a Type 3 civilization, they could be here tomorrow. Or, looked at another way, they could have been here hundreds or thousands or millions of years ago and left. There's a lot of ways to think about this. And I have only just begun, and I'm sure you as well have only just begun. So if you want to look this up, if you want to verify the story or see what's breaking, continuing to break, here's another one on my screen. Has Kepler discovered an alien megastructure? I guess you could put in, let me read you the star information again. It is KIC 846-2852. And again, we're talking about possible alien megastructures. Never thought I'd get to read something like that on the air. Okay, so we're going to gear up here with that story and see what we can figure out. And certainly our guest coming up, I'm sure we'll have comments. Dr. Stephen M. Greer, MD, is founder and director of the Disclosure Project and Sirius Technology Advanced Research, LLC. He presided over the groundbreaking of the UN National Press Club Disclosure event in 2001. I remember that. Over 20 military, government, intelligence, corporate witnesses presented compelling testimony regarding the existence of extraterrestrial life forms visiting Earth and the development of the energy and propulsion systems of these craft. He is the author of 4 insightful books and multiple DVDs on the UFO-ET subject. He continues to pursue Disclosure, Contact, and New Energy. The film Sirius, which documents his work, premiered in April of 2013 and was the largest crowd-funded documentary at that time. So in a moment, coming up, Dr. Stephen Greer. Pretty cool night for Dr. Greer to be on. I wonder what he'll have to say about this. Well, Art, to me it's no surprise, because they're already here. And, you know, he could be right. You're listening to Midnight in the Desert.
Conductor Art Bell will punch your ticket when you call 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
And if you want a little more of a freak out, I should have said this, and Rossi reminds me, Art, from other stories that I've been reading about this discovery of possible megastructures surrounding an older star, most seem to point to it fitting the model of a Dyson sphere. A Dyson sphere. Now, a Dyson sphere is a hypothetical megastructure that, brace yourselves, folks, completely encompasses a star and hence captures most or all of its power output. Let me read that again for you. A Dyson sphere is a hypothetical megastructure that completely encompasses a star and hence captures most or all of its power output. What does that sound like to you? I'll tell you what it sounds like to me. When Michio Kaku, Professor Kaku, was here and described a Type 3 civilization, he said they would be as to us as gods. He said they would have the power to control or capture the power of a sun. Kind of like a Dyson sphere. This is a big story. And I wonder if somebody's going to call up CNN and say, hey, CNN, this is a big story. Anyway, here comes my guest. Welcome back, Dr. Stephen Greer. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be with you.
Okay, well, obviously, I'd like first to catch your reaction to this news.
Well, I mean, my reaction to it is, first of all, it doesn't surprise me. Secondly, you know, the Kepler Space Telescope is estimating now there are 11 billion Earth-like planets just in our own galaxy, and our galaxy is one of billions of galaxies. And then you consider and you factor in that, you know, the universe is some 14 billion years old, and we've only had anything resembling civilization on this planet for, well, I'm sure we have it yet, but anything, you know, resembling advanced civilization for 100 years. It's a statistical certainty that there are civilizations out there that are on the order of hundreds of thousands to millions of years technologically more developed than we are. Therefore, it would follow. Now, what's interesting about this is that...
I know you don't think you're a funny man, but I almost swallowed my tongue.
I know.
I'm serious. You just said you were so deadpan about that. Oh, God.
Well, you know, I'm an emergency doctor, so, you know, the stuff I see, you know, you begin to wonder how civilized we are.
Yes.
But the point I'm making is that, you know, this conforms with information I've gotten from sources inside the Naval Research Labs, inside the Pentagon at the Defense Intelligence Agency, where their technologies that are much more advanced than the Kepler Space Telescope have imaged massive megastructures before. And I have talked about this openly. You know, my military advisor for years was at a facility where they track deep space objects. And in our own solar system, there was an object moving under its own control that was over 26 miles in diameter. And recently, a very senior official at the Naval Research Labs, Richard Foch, told me he was at a meeting with a general at the Defense Intelligence Agency who was absolutely white with shock because he had been briefed on an object in our solar system that was even larger than that, intimating it was in the hundreds of miles to thousands of miles in diameter, moving under its own steam within our own solar system. So when you start looking at going out 1,500 light years, it's not surprising that there could be an object out there that's in the order of hundreds of miles, perhaps thousands of miles in diameter of artificial construction. And I think that there's probably a lot more data in the classified projects world on these sorts of objects than are being acknowledged, and here you are now getting to where we have imaging capabilities in the non-classified world up in space that are beginning to pick up on perhaps one of these objects. So that's kind of the perspective I would bring to it.
But there's no way to not look at this as just gigantic news when it's actually breaking across the world right now. A Dyson sphere would be a type 3 civilization that controls the power of a star. They would be so far ahead of us, Dr. Greer, that, as I said at the beginning of the show, you know, they could be here if they wanted to in the blink of an eye, I'm sure. They could have been here long, long ago and left, perhaps in disgust. I mean, who knows? They would be so far.
I think there are multiple civilizations that are still observing and waiting to see how humans, you know, play out this phase of our development. And because, you know, we're exactly at that point. You know, you mentioned the levels of civilizations. We're a type zero civilization.
That's
we haven't even achieved, you know, a stable civilization that's peaceful, that isn't destroying its own biosphere.
Right.
So when you look at it, that this is the big, you know, question. It's sort of an evolutionary question of whether humans will be able to make this leap to a level 1, 2, 3, 4 civilization. And I would wager that there are multiple civilizations out there that are way past a level 5 or 10 that are so developed, and their technologies are so advanced that it just would completely seem magical to us.
I wonder. wonder then if such a civilization would become aware somehow that we have become aware of them.
Oh, I'm sure they would know that in real time. I mean, why not? When you start looking at when I started the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which then evolved and into the Disclosure Project, because we started having contact experiences witnessed by masses of people, including Air Force colonels. What I found very quickly is that these civilizations have technologies that are beyond the speed of light, and their communication systems interface with coherent, directed thought, whatever thought is. Now, we think of a thought and the field of consciousness as some metaphysical thing. Mm. But what if it's quantifiable? What if you can technologically interface with consciousness and thought? Well, that means that they would be aware pretty quickly when they were being a beam of awareness and thought was coming in their direction. They would have sensors that would pick that up.
Mm.
And in fact, if you look at Dr. Richard Haynes and I put together a bunch of these close encounters of the fifth kind type contact events, and many of them were actuated and caused by interactivity with some type of ET communication systems and a coherent thought, just like light can be made into coherent light into a laser. And even though for many people, I mean, they're going, whoa, you're way out here in left field quickly, but I mean, if you're talking about something that's ET, why does it have to look like a late 19th century or 20th century radio, for crying out loud?
Oh, I'm with you all the way. Let me answer your question.
That's the whole problem with the whole UFO subject. Everyone's living. Everyone's living in the 19th,
right.
19th century. Yeah.
You said why not, Doctor? You said, in other words, that they could be aware of the fact that we are now aware of them in real time, and the answer to that question might be, because, number one, they're a type 3 or better civilization. Number two, they might not like the fact that we know they're there. And if they don't, well, I'll let that hang in the air.
If the civilization's that advanced, I know Stephen Hawking and other people have loved to have their sort of eschatological space war fantasies. But the reality of it is, if you've existed and made it through the challenges we're facing, and haven't destroyed yourself when you cross the nuclear threshold, and you've reached into what I call the trans-dimensional level of physics, things that go beyond the speed of light, pulling energy out of the so-called zero-point energy field, where a cubic centimeter of space has more energy than the entire United States needs to run on for a month. I think when you begin to look at those kinds of developments, if you were still of the mindset of marauding space aliens a la Hollywood's movies, that would be made clear very, very quickly, and only that, but in all likelihood, you would have destroyed yourself with someone of a similar mind bent. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of kind of conjecture, and I think one of the questions I always have when there's sort of a drip of this sort of news, is this some kind of an acculturation process that's beginning to break into the news, so that there can be sort of a xenophobic, fear-based spin on it to continue to throw, you know, more fuel into what Eisenhower famously called the military-industrial complex. I'm always looking at things in two ways. You know, it's a step forward, or is it actually something where they're trying to hoist up another false flag operation?
We need bigger bombs.
Yeah, of course. I mean, because, oh, my God, now we have to face, you know, to fight the aliens. Well, first of all, if you're at that level of a civilization, a hydrogen bomb, a thermonuclear bomb would look like a tinker toy. I mean, let's face it, because you're dealing with much more powerful technological systems. And therefore, the idea that there would be any kind of violent engagement lasting more than a nanosecond is foolish. Just like mutual assured destruction with the Soviet Union was a foolish thing. I mean, you know, we still have enough of these nuclear weapons to make the rubble bounce and glow.
I know. I did a whole entire show recently, Doctor, on what a nuclear war with Russia would be like, and he described it in 3 hours in gory detail, and it's nothing anybody wants to have anything to do with. And I must tell you, Doctor, we're closer to that moment now, in my opinion, than we have been since Cuba. Yeah. Because of the Bay of Pigs. I'm talking about the missiles.
There's a lot of foolishness going on. And but, you know, you throw into this mix the sort of the sort of stock and trade xenophobia, fear-based stuff with aliens. I actually think that, you know, if this holds up, that this discovery is confirmed, it's going to have to be looked at in the context of a lot of other evidence that's in the UFO field that's long been dismissed or ignored by the mainstream media. So in that sense, it could be an entree to more evidence being revisited by the public if indeed this discovery holds out to be not some sort of artifact or anomaly.
Do you really think they'd look at it in that larger context?
I think eventually they might. You know, because it was like I was asked recently, you know, because, you know, I put the when I put this briefing together that was provided to John Podesta for Obama, you know, people said, well, now Podesta is the chairman of Hillary Clinton's committee. I said, yeah, but that doesn't mean that anyone at that level is going to take any action or that they even have access.
All right, doctor, hold it right there. We've got a break. We're at the bottom of the hour. We have to break here, so hold tight. Dr. Stephen Greer is my guest, and again, we are dealing with breaking news this night. You think we've found them? Some of them? We would have to locate a type 3, right? I'm Art Bell, and this is Midnight in the Desert.
Midnight in the Desert doesn't screen calls. We trust you, but remember, the NSA, well, you know. To call the show, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
My favorite Ross by any measure. Hi, everybody. My guest is Dr. Stephen Greer. I got a wormhole message from Wesley, who says Dyson spheres, Art, were dreamt up in a fictional bit of sci-fi writing. That way he gets fictional in twice. They're not the real thing and actually can't be built. Well, Wesley, not by us. Yes, you're right. A Dyson sphere would be, well, out of our construction realm, definitely, Wesley, but a Type 3 civilization controlling or capturing the power of a fusion... presently a operating system, a fusion operating system in space. For them, why not? Doctor, welcome back.
Good to be back. Glad you're back, too, by the way. I'm really glad to see you back on the air.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I had to sit out 2 years of, you know, like in jail, like in Monopoly, where you go to jail. Anyway, it's good to be here, and especially on a night like this. I mean, it's so cool to think about what it might mean. Maybe not in our lifetimes, Doctor, or maybe you're right, and they're already here. Oh, that brings up another topic. Since I spoke to Seth Shostak earlier tonight, and I want to play something for you. You may have been warned that this was coming. But I want to play something. This came, what I'm about to play for you came from, YouTube. And I think it has, it's the reason I'm going to ask you a question. So here it is. It's your voice.
Now I'm going to say something here because this is enough years after it happened. A few years ago there was a show called, Coast to Coast with Art Bell. And he was on the cover of Time magazine, and I was one of his favorite guests. And when I'd be on that show, it really lit things up at certain agencies. And one time I was on his show a few years back, towards the end of his career there, and this issue came up, and I said, well, you know, I have a source high up in SETI that confirms to me that they, in fact, have received interplanetary signals. But in a kind of phased, not normal array, it was kind of a pulsed array, and that it was kept secret and covered up. And the SETI people were furious. Subsequently, Seth Shostak got on the show and just said, well, Dr. Greer knew what he was talking about, and he probably talked to some volunteer computer operator because we have all this network of volunteers. What Art Bell didn't know, and which Seth Shostak didn't know, and which I'm going to say now because it's enough water gone under the bridge, is that the guy who told me that was the founder of the SETI project and the Drake equation, Dr. Drake. He told me that they had had that contact. Moreover, a man who had been one of Carl Sagan's best friends, the best man at his wedding, confirmed it. And he had been present when the WOW signal came in at Harvard.
Okay. Oh, all right. So I played that for Seth when he was on. That was, I don't know, a month and a half ago. And he said, no way.
Yeah,
no
way. And there's no way that he can be, he would be allowed to even confirm it. Dr. Drake, when he and I had the phone call, said, if it was even known I was having this conversation with you, it would be the end of my career and maybe my life. Subsequently, the man I was referring to, who, along with Carl Sagan and others, had co-founded the Extrasolar Planetary Society, which is the early attempt to find other Earth-like star systems out there, and another man who was one of the founders of the Allegheny Observatory up in near Pittsburgh, George Fennell. And the other man I'm referring to, who is good friends with Carl Sagan, Jim Mullaney, used to be one of the editors of Sky and Telescope magazine, Astronomy magazine. Both of them had front row seats. These were not volunteers. These were the top people. And they confirmed independently. They didn't know each other. They confirmed that, in fact, signals had come in and they had been kept quiet. Now, Seth and I had a debate on Voice of America the day of or after the National Press Club event in Washington for the launch of the Global Disclosure Movement. And I had a number of top-secret military people with me on that broadcast on Voice of America. He kept making these assertions that there was no evidence, even though we were presenting massive amounts of evidence. I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, testimony, transcripts, eyewitnesses, you know, people who had top-secret clearances. And it was clear that, you know, he did not win, by the way, the debate on Voice of America. But what was interesting is that it was clear that no matter what you present in the way of evidence, he would say it's not true and we're still looking for a signal.
Right.
So my only question is, you're either incredibly poorly informed or you're carrying water to maintain the secrecy on this for somebody.
Would you care to speculate on which of those you rather imagine it to be?
It's the latter.
Well,
he's really an intelligent person.
Yes,
and,
he is.
You know, these names I just gave you, George Fennell, Jim Mullaney, Dr. Drake himself and the Drake equation, these are all people I've spent, that I've spoken with. And in the case of Mullaney and Fennell, I've spent enormous amounts of time with them. And these were key figures in the early days of the search. And they, in fact, what was interesting about Jim Mullaney is that he was at the congressional briefings that we did in 1997, you may remember this, before we did the public National Press Club event.
I do recall.
And he presented at that, and it was closed door. There were members of congressmen, there were chairmen of committees there, there were people from the vice president and president's office at that time, it was Bill Clinton and Al Gore. There were all these people. It was at the Georgetown Westin Hotel. We had a dozen or so top secret folks there presenting. One of them was Jim Mullaney. He got so much heat after that, he wrote me a note and said, you are absolutely on the right track. All of this is true. But if I continue to do anything to help disclose this information, even in these closed briefings, I have been informed that it will be the end of my career. So this is serious stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's serious stuff.
I have worked with people of the highest integrity who have been threatened, who have been had their careers put at jeopardy, and who have had to back off from stepping forward publicly because of the henchmen by this fascistic cabal of secrecy.
Dr. Greer? Dr. Greer, why?
And so I'm going to call them out. you know, this is the first time I've shared those names on a radio show, and I'm doing it tonight.
All right. My next question is...
What I just told you, a much bigger story than these objects, 1,500 light
years. Well, they're both big stories, but you're right.
I got news for you. This is a bigger story, because this is what's going on planet Earth with the chicanery of these goose-stepping fools.
Goose-stepping fools?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, the kind of lies. I mean, I think people need to say it's enough of this.
Wow.
You know, I mean, whose water are they carrying?
My other question, we'll come back to it, Doctor. Yeah. My question is why? Why are people's lives on the line? Why are people lying? Why is it that big a deal that people would get killed or lose careers over it? Why?
Oh, it's a huge deal. Look, I mean, first of all, it's a complete change in the paradigm of how we view ourselves in the cosmos.
Okay.
Everything from organized religion to philosophy to history to the origins of the human race.
Right.
Secondly, the technological implications. If you acknowledge, not that it's something floating out there 1,500 light years away, but you acknowledge that there are objects and civilizations that have gone beyond the speed of light and have gotten here, and that we have studied these technologies, and moreover, we have them in classified projects, and then you put that up against the trillions of dollars being spent to try to put Band-Aids on global warming or fossil fuels or pollution. You know, this would be, the public would demand that this issue be dealt with properly, because we're running our planet into the ground.
I agree.
Environmentally, socially, politically.
Yeah, but doctor, that's part of the why. You just said it. We're running our planet into the ground. If we're running our planet into the ground, doctor, then for God's sakes, these technologies should be brought forward to save ourselves.
Well, I know. I've spent 25 years working trying to make that happen. And so, but you have the biggest special interests in the world not wanting that to happen. Huh. It's not just oil and gas and coal. It's the petrodollar system. It's the macro. This is something that, you know, the Minister of Defense, Paul Hillier, and I talked a lot about before we did our first press conference together up there in Canada, when he was sort of coming out on this subject. And the Honorable Paul Hillier said, look, it's a macroeconomic problem. You're absolutely right. Because if you have a source of energy that'll run your home and your car, and every village and house is independent from the need to be in this centralized system, this is the biggest revolution economically in the history of the human race, bar none. And that's really, we're really talking about macroeconomic power, geopolitical power.
Yeah, but it is the one thing that would save us that they are keeping secret from us. While the planet goes to hell in a handbasket, you know, we've got oceans ready to come up by not inches but feet. We've got cities that are going to be disappearing under the water, doctor.
Right.
So if ever there was a time, it's now.
Yeah, but, you know, it was interesting. You know, I was hitting my head against the wall back in the 90s, and I remember the guy who set up my briefing meeting with the Clinton CIA director said to me, look, this guy had been on Ronald Reagan's National Security Council staff. He said long-term planning at the National Security Council was 6 months. I mean, a lot of these folks just, no. I mean, that's how banal and stupid some of this is. Now, there's another level. And that is, people have inherited the secrecy, and they don't know how to get themselves out of the box.
So
in a sense, it becomes the inertia, or if you want to look at the momentum of that secrecy, becomes very difficult for a subsequent generation to change, because they have inherited a big sticky wicket. And, back some years ago, when I was getting so fed up with all the problems that we were facing with the threats and what have you with what we were doing with disclosure, there's a guy at the CIA who is very high up in this management entity that keeps all this secret. And he basically said to me, he says, we've got to have some people trying to bring this information out, because the system is so dysfunctional and the threats are so real to people who try to defect. I mean, don't forget, no less a figure than Bill Colby, the former CIA director, was going to was in the process of meeting with a member of my board of directors to hand over one of these operational so-called free energy devices and some seed funding to get it out to the public when he was killed and they found him floating down the Potomac River. People say that's a conspiracy theory. It is not. I met his best friend, who was a colonel, who said to me point blank that he gave his life trying to bring this out. So, you know, everyone sitting in their armchairs thinks that this is just some kind of a game. But, you know, when you're dealing with people who've lost their lives, like I have on this, it's a very serious issue. And what they're trying to maintain is that their ironic death grip on the control over the planet. But it's, of course, they're killing it by squeezing it to death. And this is the argument that we've been making for years. And so I think that if it was just about intelligent life out there, it wouldn't be an issue. It's because the intelligent life is very much involved and has been observing Earth for a long time, and the technologies that explain their presence would completely terminate the macroeconomic and oil and gas systems that we have today. And this is something that has been forestalled for 60 years. I mean, I'm convinced that Eisenhower would have really wanted to move this forward, but they circled the wagons and shut him out of the loop.
All right, let me make a statement, and you can react to it, all right? You and I have known each other probably 15 years or more. Maybe longer. So during that time, Doctor, you've been on my show many times, and many times you have said, Art, this is it. We've really got it. I can't tell you anymore right now, but so-and-so has developed such-and-such, and this is really it. And, of course, something has always happened, and it hasn't been it.
Yeah, it's been a disaster, particularly with the technologies, yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, what do you have to say about all that?
Let me give you an example. This actually happened pretty recently. This was like about 4 or 5 years ago. And there was a man who with a top-secret clearance working at under contract down near the Redstone Arsenal there in Alabama, near the Huntsville Space Flight Center. And he had five shepherds, they're called, in the intelligence community who were holding his clearances and who had cleared him to work with us to develop a basic prototype of one of these devices that would put out more energy than you have to put in. So we provided a grant to him, about $65,000, not a lot, so that he could work on that. And he was cleared to do it. About the time he was assembling that, a bunch of these goose-stepping goons came down to his command, threatened him, threatened his family, did all kinds of things to stop him. Now, this is a well-documented case. This is not ancient history, and it's not a conspiracy theory. He backed out of it so quickly. So we were within a couple of months of having one of these prototypes again, and they came in and scared the hell out of this engineer, who was, by the way, absolutely brilliant, and who has worked on things that were transdimensional physics for classified projects for almost 40 years, from 1974 until now, well, over 40 years.
So what did he do? So just shut it down?
He absolutely shut it down. He was scared to death. So that's that. So this is something where people go, how could he do that and betray you that way? I said, well, I understood it, because he was doing this as a lone wolf, even though he had the clearance. And I met with a colonel who had retired and had become a civilian intelligence employee who was one of his shepherds holding his security clearances, who told me, we really think it's time that this level of the technology, not the things that fly around that they've developed, which this man had worked on, the so-called anti-grab stuff, but the just basic energy technologies, and we're going to let him do that. So this was a very prolonged negotiation. I first met the man in 2004, I believe it was. By 2010, they were willing to cut him loose and work on this. And then in came some these thugs who basically from another compartmented project who threatened him. So this is, you know, this is the life I've lived.
Do you know any of the specifics of the threat that was made? Was it, I mean, is it like, keep going and your family's dead, you're dead, what?
Absolutely. Yes, exactly that. And in fact, the man who set up the meeting with me, he was privy to so much stuff that he was told point blank that, and this was a senior fellow at the Naval Research Lab, that if he disclosed what he knew about some of this, that they would kill him, his family, his children, and his grandchildren. live on conspiracy sites who think this is just all, you know, whatever. No, this is really how this thuggish world works. And so it's a very difficult thing to get out there. It's been the most, doing the disclosure, the informational part of disclosure, top secret witnesses, documents, that sort of thing, was difficult. Trying to bring out the technologies that could fix our planet and bring us to a level one civilization, that is the heaviest lift I've ever had to do in my life. And I mean, much more traumatic than, you know, taking care of a child that dies in my arms in the emergency department. It has been absolutely traumatic.
Well, you have a family, Doctor. Aren't you afraid for them?
No.
Well, perhaps you should be.
I'll just tell you, when that was brought up once, some folks who work in this intelligence community wouldn't even let me answer and says, we don't have...
Will you partake of that last offered cup? Or disappear into the potter's ground? When the man comes around.
Wanna take a ride? Exclusively on the Dark Matter Digital Network. This is Midnight in the Desert with your host, Art Bell. To call Art, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
My guest is previous emergency room doctor, Dr. Stephen Greer. And we're having a very, very serious conversation tonight, actually. Bruce has a question. I have this thing called the wormhole, which he can fire questions through, and he fired one. Art, please ask Dr. Greer about the message he's talking about that was received. What was the nature of the message, and where was it coming from? I have never heard any of this from him before. Doctor?
Well, this wasn't told to me where they thought it was coming from or if there was any content to it, except it was confirmed to be extraterrestrial and from an intelligent civilization. And there have been more than one. There was a very old one and then a more recent one that apparently came in by some technologies that were not just normal speed of light sort of technologies. And, you know, the senior scientists in Naval Research Labs confirmed to me that in their lab they had done a type of modulated transdimensional electromagnetic signal that was proven to be multiples of the speed of light. So the idea that the light barrier is inviolate is a myth. And but, of course, you know, any civilization that is going from one star system to another and has that capability is going to be using communication as well as transportation systems that drop out of linear space-time and go beyond the speed of light. Apparently, that something along those lines happened in addition to one that was more of a linear signal. By linear, I mean speed of light.
Right.
So this gets into the whole question of why wouldn't that be disclosed, and then what were the origins? Now, there's a man, this is another name I've never shared in context with this story, Dr. Richard Haynes, who is at NASA Ames Research Center. He'd been looked into the UFO subject for years, was a NASA scientist. He was on my early board of directors. And in the early days, SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, had been centered there at the NASA Ames Research Center. So Dr. Haynes went over, his name was Dick Haynes, and talked to one of the senior folks there at the research center. And he bluntly said, because you know he was convinced we were already being visited. He said to the SETI official, he says, "What would you say if I told you that the SETI project is a smokescreen, and that by having it, it conveys to the scientific community and the public that they might be out there, but we haven't found anything because we're serious scientists, and that in reality, you know that they've already landed on terra firma on the Earth." And this official with SETI turned to Dick Haynes and said, "Well, Dick, I'd say that you're a very smart man." I'm quoting. There you have it.
All right. So I have interviewed Seth many, many times, and I know I've given him just a terrible time because, you know, I've said these very same things. And his response is uniform when you ask him about whether, you know, we would be informed if contact was received. And he said, oh, yes, you couldn't possibly keep it away from the American people. New York Times would be on it in 1 second. And I have doubted that answer for years and years. Seth is a great guy, but, boy, I'll tell you.
It's past his pay grade. That decision is not in his. I'm sorry. It just is. I mean, look, let's call a spade, you know. I mean,
I actually brought that up to him. I said, above your pay grade.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, if it's above the pay grade of the President of the United States, you think it's not above the pay grade of Seth? I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, the stories we're discussing tonight are astronomically large.
Oh, yeah. It's
gigantic.
The biggest story in the history of the human race. I agree with you.
All right, well, you've been batting your head against it for years and years and years, and do you have any hope at all that you can come away with anything other than headache anytime soon?
Sure. Well, it's a process. Look, I mean, this is an ultra marathon, not a sprint. And I knew that when I got involved with it. So, you know, when we started this project, about 25-30% of the population thought that UFOs were real. Now it's more than half. Two-thirds of the public think that there's intelligent life out there, and a majority of the public believe we've been visited in the past, if not currently.
Yes.
43% of the public think that we're currently being visited. So we've made a huge amount of progress. And, you know, since we've done the Disclosure Project launch, there are 14 countries that have opened up their UFO files. There have been Chilean generals come forward with video and other evidence. You know, this continues to happen. But the big holdup is the mega superpower known as the United States of America and its transnational allies. I want to keep the lid on this for geopolitical, macroeconomic, and technological reasons. And also, I have to say, reasons that are related to sort of a worldview. This gets into this whole question. You know, Buzz Aldrin said, hey, we need to go back to the moons around Mars to look into the obelisks and other structures that were there. I mean, Buzz Aldrin has said that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that some years ago, a man who was involved with who worked at Jet Propulsion Labs came up to me. I was given a praise, and he says, look, I work at JPL, and you're absolutely right. There are structures both on the moon and on Mars, but that are ancient. And on Mars, we're talking really ancient, probably millions of years, not thousands. And I said, well, why at least can't that be released? Because that's sort of in the past. It's archaeological, etc. He says, no, you don't understand. He said, if that was released, it would collapse the foundations of every orthodox religious belief system on Earth. I said, well, good, if it's based on information that's not correct. He says, no, you don't seem to understand how powerful those interests are.
So essentially Brookings, right?
This was a scientist saying this to me.
Essentially,
this is a scientist, not a theologian.
I've got
you. This is a scientist.
I've got you. Essentially Brookings, right? Right? It's essentially Brookings, what they said.
Right. Brookings
did a study, you may recall,
yep.
Doctor.
Yep. Oh, I do know it. Yeah, I have it. Yep.
Okay. Well, they said, look, everything would collapse. You know, religious institutions and on, the economy, everything would go.
Well, I don't think it would collapse. It would have to get transformed. And so this is, you know, a couple years ago I was at a gathering with 120 world leaders on an island off the coast of Australia up in the Great Barrier Reef. And it was one of these confabs where the Chatham House rules are in effect. I don't know if you know what those are. It means that you can share what's stated there, but you can't attribute it to anybody. So I was sort of a guest speaker. The organizers of it are people who are very good friends with the Clinton.
So, in other words, it's kind of like Las Vegas.
Yes, exactly. You can't say who said what. So it was interesting because I had people at this meeting who absolutely were, you know, they were very upfront about the fact that this information is something that can either be viewed as disruptive or transformational.
Uh-huh.
And so the whole title of this entire three-day weekend with these literally 120 world leaders that were at this from all walks of life, some were corporate, some were academic, some were political, the Minister of Defense was there, and basically the title of it was From Disruption Opportunity. So the whole point I was trying to make is if somebody had wanted to suppress the internet or computers coming around because you own stock in Royal Typewriters or something, You know, yes, it's disruptive on one level. On another level, it would be incredibly transformational. I mean, imagine having a civilization where there was no longer the need for poverty or pollution, and energy would be zero at its cost. I mean, this would be amazing. Now, there are stakeholders. I mean, some of the top people in the Australian coal mining industry were there, which is the only bright spot in the Australian economy for exports to China is coal to run the polluting power plants in China. That's why all the pollution is landing on the West Coast from China. But, you know, obviously those coal mines would be shut down within 10 or 15 years. And same thing with the oil wells. I mean, you'd have oil for plastic and that's it. But that, you know, we're now talking trillions of dollars of an economic change, but we're also talking about an economy that would be lifted, that would be growing by tens of trillions of dollars. So it depends on where the stakeholders are and how much power they have. The problem with our political system, and by extension our macroeconomic and military industrial complex, is that the stakeholders who have the power are the people who are really calling the shots.
All right. Let me stop you for a second. I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
You touched on political, so I'm going to ask you about this.
Yeah.
In years past, Doctor, we have had candidate after candidate after candidate who is an insider. And we've had to choose from insider one or insider two, and once in a while maybe an insider three. This year, things are a little bit different. We've got Trump, for one thing. Trump is, I don't know what Trump is. He's a wild man, absolute wild man. But if he became president, do you think there's a chance that he would say, to hell with all of you, I'm going to tell you?
Well, I will tell you what. You're making a fact, not in evidence, okay? Here's the fact that's not in evidence. You're making an assumption that the President of the United States, by virtue of that, has an all-access pass. They do not. I mean, remember what Jimmy Carter said. Jimmy Carter ran on ending UFO secrecy, had a sighting. He got into the White House, and he started pushing on this and started the whole White House study of UFOs. And two of these goons showed up with an all-access pass in the Oval Office and said to the President, sir, if you would like to complete your first term as president, you will keep your damn mouth shut about this. Now, this I know for a fact.
All right. I know. Yeah. I know this.
So this is the question is, you know, you could put anyone in the Oval Office. And the question is, do they have the courage to stand up to these sort of interests? And that's what we haven't seen. And I'm not holding my breath that anyone from left, right, center, libertarian, A, would have access, and B, would have the courage to stand up to these folks. Now, could they? Technically, yes. There's enough actionable intelligence, let me just use that word, that we can provide that if they wanted to get into that system and demand, they could.
Now, okay, well, all I'm saying is our potential political near future could be very different. I'm not saying that they would have the pass that they need or that they would have the knowledge they would need, but some of what's offered looks a little different this time around.
Yeah, you're right. It does. And whether or not that plays out into, you know, I tell people when you boil it all down, the currency that matters, courage. I think if you don't have the courage to do it, you're not going to do it. I mean, and so far what I've seen with the political class and the moneyed class is that when the going gets tough, they run the other way with their tail between their legs. Now, that's a very jaundiced view, but that's what I've observed over 25 years of dealing with, and I have a home in Washington. I meet with folks all the time, and obviously many of them, everyone is interested in the subject. Let me put it that way. Whether or not anyone wants to stick their neck out on it, that's a very big question.
Well, I think there are going to be more willing to stick their necks out when they begin to observe the water at their ankles.
Well, yes, that could be. You know, and how much pain does there have to be before these folks begin to realize we just can't continue driving the ship of state over a cliff here.
Everybody in the world wants what we have, and they're beginning to get it. Plus, and I don't know how long the world can last at this rate and be sustainable and livable. And at some point, one thing is going to get bigger than the other, and that's when you'll observe radical change. I hope.
Right. Well, it's a shame that it would have to get that bad, though, because we're talking about things that could be really severe. And the problem with it's a little bit like ignoring your house roof is leaking, and you just keep ignoring it, and then the structure and the foundation starts rotting, and the whole damn thing falls in.
That's right.
So there's a lot of deferred maintenance, and everyone knows. You know, I've met with folks who are generals and admirals who say, oh, yeah, it's a mistake that this was ever kept secret. But that's the way it is, and it's just too complicated to try to change it now. So some of the attitude is let the system collapse. I mean, it's sort of an eschatological view of things. You know?
It seems a hard way to go.
Well, it is. It's very unwise, but that's, you know, a lot of people just kind of have that view. That there was an admiral who was the head of CONUS, or Continental United States Security, and he was meeting with it, and he said, look, you're absolutely right. It's ridiculous. This is secret. But he says, my main job is maintaining the sort of the status quo of the world energy supply. He says, and this is such a complicated problem, and the change is so huge, I just want to retire from this command and go fishing at my ranch out in Montana. I mean, that's literally what he said. So, you know, everyone puts their pants on one leg at a time. There's no one leaping tall buildings here. So when you talk to a lot of these folks, they basically just don't want to take it on. It's too big of an issue. And, in fact, Paul Hellyer was meeting with a senator up in who was on the Armed Services for Canada, the Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer, told me that this guy used to be kind of an understudy for him, and now was the chairman of the Armed Services Equivalent Committee in the Senate of Canada, Canadian Parliament. And when Hellyer brought this up, he says, look, I have a 5-pound line, and you're wanting me to reel in a 2,000-pound fish.
Yeah.
And that's literally how he put it. And so I think that, you know, a lot of the public has to understand that a lot of times this inertia and fear and the lack of courageous leadership is really a big problem. I mean, it sounds very mushy, but when you get right down to it, it is about courageous leadership that we need.
All right. Well, here's a statement for you and a question, and it is, look, I know, yes, I have a young wife in her 30s. I have an 8-year-old daughter. If somebody came to me, doctor, and said, look, buddy, you stay on the air, and your wife and your daughter and you ultimately are going to be very dead. I would be off the air. Now, shift to Dr. Greer. Dr. Greer is talking about things and goose steppers and no doubt upsetting a lot of people with what you're saying. Now, what gets you the pass that allows you not to get a threat of that nature, Doctor?
Well, I've had threats of that nature, although not involving my family, and it's something that I've always known as a possibility, and it doesn't stop me from doing what I'm doing. Part of it is that there are some folks in the so-called MAGIC group, M-A-J-I-C group, who very much want to see this problem resolved. You know, I call them the white hats or the friendlies in this group. One of the problems that people have, and this is a problem with these sweeping conspiracy theories, is that they think it's homogenous and everyone's the same. No, it's very fractured, actually. And when I first was, way back when I was doing this briefing for the CIA director, I was told that only a third of the policy group controlling the subject was at all in favor of it coming out. Not long ago, I was told 70% of them would like to see this issue resolved now. So it's gone from 30-some percent to 70. Now, people say, if it's 70%, why isn't it resolved? I say, because the other 30% are murderous sociopaths. So, but it means that there are some folks who very much are protective of what we're trying to do. They know we're on the side of the angels and trying to bring out the information and create a peaceful and better world with this information, and also a more peaceful approach to the problem with these visitors from outer space. You know, instead of militarizing it, let's do something that's more peaceful and diplomatic. That was the core of why I launched the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence 25 years ago this month, in fact.
Well, I'd gamble with my life, but not that of my family. I've got to tell you, if they said they were going to kill my daughter and wife, that'd be it for me. And I think most people, including the man who was developing the energy system that you didn't get, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
My life is one thing. Your life is one thing. Maybe, doctor, they consider you and me useful idiots.
Well, or expendable. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, useful idiots or expendable. But there are people who want to see a lot of this information continue to go forward. And I think that, you know, you really can't overthink it, but I've never had a direct threat to family, and I have had direct threats to myself. The worst, though, come from the public. You know, I mean, you know, all kinds of wacko people. But
true.
Well, no, seriously. I mean,
you don't have to convince me.
Oh, believe me. So, but I think that the bigger problem is with, you know, I think that if the public got together and resolved to change this themselves, I'm not saying that these covert interests are impotent, but they don't have nearly the power the public thinks they do if the public were to actually move together. And I think that there's two sides of this equation. There are people trying to keep it secret, and then there's the apathy of the public. It's sort of like what happened in World War II when in Germany people said, oh, well, this can't happen, or someone else will take care of it. Next thing you know, they're goose-stepping, you know, millions of people into ovens. I think that's one of the problems with humans, is that they really always expect someone else will fix it. And I think we have got to stop that. We have to come together. It's very much a we the people kind of concept. We the people have to get together, bring out these technologies. We the people have to come together and go and find people who have been working in these classified projects and say, why don't you come forward with more and more information and evidence? We have got to come together and do that. We launched about a year and a half ago an app so that anyone in the world who wants to connect to another Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind group and go out under the stars together can do so.
Okay, we'll get into that, but I want to point out to you, Doctor,
really,
I don't want to...
that's actually happening.
Discourage you, but while people dressed in black have been lopping off heads right and left, the American people have cheerfully watched their constitutional rights to privacy disappear in front of their very eyes without so much as lifting a finger.
I agree. I think the Patriot Act was ultimately a test to see if anyone would give a damn. And no one really did, very few people. And it was, I think, a way of testing the waters to see how far down the road of totalitarian, super state, you know, fascistic policies the public would go along with passively.
Well, fear is a strong motivator.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And in the aftermath of 9/11, there was a lot of fear, obviously.
Well, just watching what's going on in the Middle East right now is lots of fear. So, you know, I mean, our rights have just gone away and gone away and gone away. I'm 70 now. I'm old enough to remember what it was a time when we actually had those rights, and so I've seen them disappear. A lot of people, right. I think, haven't been paying attention. You know, they're too much into their video game.
Right, exactly. Well, I think also the there's sort of an erosion that happens. It's like the frog being boiled in the water, doesn't even notice it. It's just little by little by little being chipped away at.
Right.
And that's where, between that and the sort of the media kind of making everyone kind of passive and not engaged. But I think that's why we have to awaken. There has to be this sort of awakening in the body politic and see a change. Or things may get to the point where there's enough pain that people go, we've got to wake up and change this. You know, it may be at the 12th hour. but ultimately, that's one of those two things are going to have to play out. And for us to make it over to the other side of this.
I'm curious, Doctor, how you viewed the Ed Snowden affair.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was up in New York this past last year, and I was talking to a man who works with Ed Snowden's lawyer. And I said the big problem with that was that Snowden was very young. He didn't know the difference between a top secret, a TSSCI, top secret special compartmented intelligence, and an unacknowledged special access project. And that cost him everything. In other words, if he had disclosed illegally run unacknowledged special access projects that the Congress and the President didn't know about because they were so black, he would have been absolutely on safe territory. But if you disclose something that is being properly managed, even if it's a ridiculous and the president and other people are informed of it, it's being legally handled. So he needed to have someone other than the people who are around him to say, look, if you're going to disclose something, be sure it's something that is an unacknowledged special access project that is, by definition, being run illegally and off the books. And that would have been something that no one could have come after him for. But in a sense, he risked everything for disclosing projects that were being, that were just a later incarnation of what the New York Times exposed back many a decade earlier in the Carnivore program and the Echelon programs with the NSA. They were just more beefed up versions of what the NSA had in the late 1990s and early 2000s that was in the mainstream media already. So the tragedy of the Snowden affair was that he didn't really understand, you know, the legalities of disclosing something and that was illegal versus legal. Now, the argument can be made, he still disclosed information that the public needed to know about, but almost everything he disclosed were of a genre of surveillance projects with emails and phone records and electronic intelligence that was exposed a decade earlier if anyone did their homework. So I think that it was sort of a tragic situation all around, and I think it was because he didn't appreciate the distinction between top secret and compartmented intelligence and unacknowledged special access projects, which is where, by the way, the whole UFO ET zero-point energy area is residing.
All right, very quickly, Doctor, I've seen a few references in media to Snowden having said something about either UFOs or alien technology or alien contact or alien something or another. I don't recall the exact reference. Are you aware whether he's actually made a statement in that area?
I've heard the same rumors, but I haven't been able to attribute it.
Yeah.
And so, and I've seen no evidence in the way of documents or anything else that, that he's released that point in that direction. By the way, the Gary McKinnon case, you remember that case where
yes.
they were trying to extradite? Well, you know, he did, the Gary McKinnon did the hacking where he found all that ET information because he saw the disclosure event that I organized in 2001. So I felt a little bit guilty about that, and I reached out to his legal team and said, look, what, you're making the wrong argument. The argument you need to make has nothing to do with the legality of the hack. It has to do with the illegality of the information he was accessing, that the information he was accessing has been managed in an illegal fashion. And if that's the argument you make, a constitutional argument, not a technical one,
yeah.
I will give you the names of people that can, you can subpoena on his behalf. I mean admirals, generals, et cetera, who have been locked out of these projects and where it can be absolutely proven in a court of law that these projects are being managed illegally. Now that was the, I actually shared that with them, and I, you know what they did with it, I don't know. Ultimately, he was able to beat it and not get extradited. But you know, I think that again, anyone listening who's in the intelligence community or a contractor, just if you're, you know, contact me if you're listening. And you know, I've dealt with some of the best constitutional attorneys and some of the best people in the world who know this system. I didn't know it. I had to be taught about this. I was a doctor, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can avoid these really catastrophic mistakes if you stick to exposing and disclosing the projects that are illegally being managed. And we can prove this, by the way. We can prove that these projects have been illegally managed. And since we can prove it, if they then were trying to be prosecuted, hey, we'd have them dead to rights. That would,
all right.
be, that would be a great court case.
All right, Doctor. Hold tight, please. We're at a break. This is Midnight in the Desert. Dr. Stephen Greer is my guest. And yes, by the way, he is a doctor. Good question, huh? How come you gave that up? How come you're doing this? Can't be making a lot doing this, right? We'll be back.
the clock strikes 12, and midnight in the desert is pounding packets your way on the Dark Matter Digital Network. To call the show, please direct your finger digits to dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
Breaking news night, more than one way. My guest was Dr. Stephen Greer. The breaking news, just one more time, is pretty amazing stuff. It appears that astronomers have located what they feel may be megastructures near a star about 1,500 light-years away, mainly KIC 846-2852. It lies just above the Milky Way between the constellations of Cygnus and Lyra. They actually used the word megastructures. So this story, watch for it, is going to get real big, real quick, or something is real wrong. Doctor, in the last segment, you were saying, look, I'm a doctor, and you are a doctor, and so I'm wondering, doctor, most doctors, well, you know, they're doing pretty well. They've got a nice house. They've got a nice family and private school the kids are, and on and on and on. Things are going well for them because they make a lot of money. You, on the other hand, have turned to everything we're talking about tonight years ago, and it just can't be that profitable compared to what you could be doing.
Oh, well, of course it isn't, and that's not why one would ever do it. You know, as an emergency doctor, you know, at this stage, you know, could be making, you know, around $500,000 a year or so.
Sure.
I mean, my view of it is that, well, a couple of things. One is you have to put all this in perspective. I didn't go into medicine for the money either. I would have gone into investment banking or something. And secondly, you know, if what are we leaving to the next? I now have, you know, I have four children, and we just had our eighth grandchild was born about 3 weeks ago. So, you know, in my view, what are you doing? What are you leaving that generation? And what kind of a world are we leaving if we don't try to do something? So, those are the bigger question. So it's not a monetary thing at all. But yes, you're absolutely right. I remember, you know, a couple of years ago, my wife and I were looking at, you know, our W-2, and we had a grand total of I think it was $35,000 in income instead of you know, $450,000. But the question is, luckily, I had done well enough as a doctor and done some things in investments, and so I was able to own a home and get the kids through college. So, you know, our needs are at this point fairly simple. But I think that's, you know, ultimately it's a choice that people make. Are you going to, you know, take this seriously or not? And I decided to take it very seriously. You know, and you can't do everything. And then for a long time I did everything. I was working full time as an emergency doctor, raising four kids, trying to do all this stuff in the Disclosure Project. It was killing me. You know, I mean, you know, because you only have so many hours in a day. But that's when you get onto this sort of really a personal choice. So are you going to give it your all or not? And we decided to give it our all. And luckily, I have a very, very supportive wife.
I was going to ask. You've had, I'm sure, the talk a few times, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And the wonderful thing about her is that, you know, she was in the Peace Corps when I met her. Her whole worldview is, you know, the same as mine in terms of how we leave the world as we a better place than we found it if we can. And for her it was, sure, let's do it and we'll manage. And she knew that, you know, I was good enough at balancing things that I'd still take care of everyone.
All right. I'm going to bounce another question off you, and then we're going to turn to some of, you know, I know you've got a lot of stuff. So I want to ask you, I recently interviewed Dr. David Jacobs.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Then I interviewed another guest, but mainly I'm going to bore in on what Dr. Jacobs said that another guest backed up. Pretty wild stuff. He said, look, all right, it's already happening. They have been experimenting with us, toying with us, if you will, genetically for a long time. There are human-alien hybrids on the planet now, and there are more and more of them. Anybody run that one by you?
Well, I've certainly heard it. I've never seen any evidence for it. What I will say is that, you know, not everything that goes bump in the night is what people think it is. And this gets into the deep end of what's called stagecraft in the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. Now, what am I talking about? The way that you stage things to create a deception, and it's basically for the purpose of psychological warfare purposes. And, you know, we put up on our website not long ago, the man, I had recorded his interview maybe 14, 15 years ago, videotape, and he didn't want it released until he had passed away because of the risk of doing so. And his name's Pawlak. It's spelled P-A-W-E-L-A-C. And his testimony is at our website, SiriusDisclosure.com, SiriusDisclosure.com, all one word. So when I got the permission to release it, I put it up there, up on our YouTube channel, and it's one of dozens and dozens of these kind of whistleblowers and deep insiders. And he was talking about how in the 1970s and 80s, he had developed, working with people who developed an RF chip, a radio frequency chip, and that the CIA got very involved with it, and then Siemens made 2 billion of them, and they were being used to put in people. And this sounds like something science fiction and very spooky. But he didn't, you know, he didn't want to have that attributed to him until after he passed away. So after he did, I got the death certificate from his wife, and it's up on our website. Now, what's interesting is how few people have actually studied this issue of how many things that are going on, what part of it is ET, what part of it is human masquerading as ET. Mm. And this is something no one's ever asked. No one's asking this question. It's like the Benowitz affair, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
Yeah, all right, and Richard Doty with Air Force mm-hmm. Office Special Investigation. But the thing that precipitated that was a woman who, near Kirkland Air Force Base in Sandia, driving late at night, saw one of our man-made flying saucers. It looks like an ET crap. It's made by Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman and a consortium of companies, SAIC and a whole bunch of them. And she, they sent a squad over to, quote, simulate an abduction, and they abducted her. But it wasn't aliens abducting her.
Right.
It was humans masquerading as aliens. And then it made its way over to Benowitz, and, oh, you know, the rest is history. But this goes on a great deal, because if they're trying to hide something, there's two things. One, it creates a great cover story to blame it on the aliens. Secondly, it also creates the specter of a fearsome thing going on out there that we need to be fighting. So there's the psychological warfare value of it, the so-called, what Wernher von Braun said, look, they're going to try to hoax a threat from outer space after they're done with the Cold War and terrorism. And by the way, we released that information before 9/11, right? So there's that part of it that's sort of more of a strategic psychological effort. And then there's the tactical, and that is, oh, we have an event happen here. It's actually one of our prototypes that's an anti-grav. Let's concoct a cover story that it was alien when it's not alien at all. So there has to be – it's not as simple as people think. When you can't just take a sort of a strictly phenomenological approach to it. In other words, here's a phenomenon. It's got to be alien. That's way too simplistic. You have to say, okay, here's something that's happened. Is it us? Is it them? Is it neither? Is it something else? And that's the whole question of how you have to approach it. So when you look at some of these stories, I go, well, maybe. But then I know guys who have been on human abduction squads masquerading as aliens on purpose. I mean, I personally have met guys on those special operations teams. And, you know, you know the Stan Romanek story, when he had this weird robotic thing that looked like an ET that came into his house, and yours, he was on the TV circuit with, you know, this alien called Boo that popped up in his window. You know this story?
I don't.
Well, he was on Good Morning America and Larry King and everything else. Anyway,
well, I was overseas for a lot of years.
Yeah, so I went up to his house. And this is a great story. This is a fascinating story. So a member of my team in Denver and I went over to Stan Romanek's house. And there was footage that Disney had bought up that was of one of these abduction things that happened in his house there outside Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And he videotaped it. And I saw the videotape, even though I couldn't get it to release because Disney bought the rights to it and they black-shelved it. They hid it. But I looked at it, and he had a tape recording of someone calling in from the intelligence community after this happened and said, Stan, it's one of the fake ones. Fake ones. Well, Stan Romanek didn't know what that meant, and there was a investigator there also from MUFON who didn't know what it meant. I said, well, yeah, this is one of the fake ones. And they said, what the hell are you talking about? I said, these are robotic sort of android things that are biologicals made by humans to look like aliens that are doing some of these abductions for their psychological warfare value. And none of these people had heard of this. I said, oh, come on, how can you not know about this? So we're looking at the videotape, and I swear this what looks like a gray alien comes robotically across his kitchen, and then he falls over. Well, the intelligence official who contacted him, because his father had been in the Air Force, said, look, they threw a chemical canister that was a knockout gas. You fell over with the camera. And then they proceeded to do this whole classic abduction sequence. Well, I'm sitting there in his kitchen looking at this videotape, and it's so obvious to me that this is nothing ET, that it's something that's man-made being done for its psychological warfare value. And why this isn't common knowledge in the UFO research community, I don't know.
Right.
Because the information about there has been, it's been out there for 20, 30 years.
Well, while we're on the subject of abductions, Doctor, your take on them, are they real? Are some of them real?
I think people have had real contact, and I think so much of what's called the abduction syndrome, not all of them, a lot of them appear to be these sort of simulated events. It's interesting. I have a document. We're going to release it next month. I'm doing an expose on a lot of this in Washington, D.C. on November 21st. People who want to come, the information's on our website, seriousdisclosure.com. And in this document from the Strategic Studies Institute, it talks about setting up a global UFO abduction cult and using stagecraft to use advanced aircraft, meaning these electromagnetic man-made UFOs, and stagecraft to engage in abductions to make people think that they're aliens for their psychological warfare value. Now, this document is from the 1990s, I think 96, 95, I'd have to pull it out. And this isn't the only bit of, you know, sort of data point you can connect these dots to. So all I say to people is not everything that goes bump in the night is what you think it is. And there's a compelling interest in the deep black transnational security state, the super secret security state, to try to create the specter of something we should be afraid of, because that's how they're going to grow the military-industrial complex. How do you grow it? I mean, you know, Panetta, the CIA director for Obama for a while, said, look, we're spending $110 billion a year chasing 70 al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan. 70, 7-0, literally.
Mm.
And that's quote. And so how do you grow this global arms and military sort of enterprise from a trillion or two to more than that? Well, you've got to create a bigger enemy. All right, and the biggest enemy, the trump card that Wernher von Braun said that would be played, is this false flag threat from outer space.
All right.
So every bit of information I get, whether it's on an abduction or this, I'm going, is it real or is it Memorex, like the old commercials? Is it real or is it stagecrafted? Because I've met with too many people who've been involved in the stagecraft and have seen too much evidence for it. So I'm always going, people say, oh, Dr. Greer says no one's had contact with real aliens and blah, blah. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you have to bring into this some kind of discernment and a bigger database of information, because otherwise you're going to get deceived.
Well, you think there's been plenty of contact. We're going to get to that in a minute. Ray in East Tennessee asked me by computer, Art, please ask Dr. Greer why he doesn't fear for his family's life. He never finished the story. You did mention yourself, but Doctor, you do have a family, and would you really, really hold on through that kind of threat?
No, it won't. It wouldn't happen. In other words, I'm trying to be very delicate about this. The people who have our backs, who want to see some of this resolved, are incredibly powerful people who have said, "Look, you never have to worry about that." And
well, why?
really don't want to see us go continue on the path we're on, which is going to be a disaster. And there are some very good people. I mean, I know this is hard for people to hear, but believe it or not, there are some really, really good and supportive people in the military and intelligence community who support disclosure, who support peaceful contact, who support. And this brings us to this whole French initiative, where the whole Ministry of Defense got behind doing a CE5 peaceful contact.
Right. Want to talk about that.
In France, which is one of the most important things. In fact, it is probably the most important government document in the history of the UFO subject. And so I think that this is, you know, people want to paint everyone with the same brush. And I think we have to be a little more nuanced than that. There are some really good people. Those people really do support what we're trying to do and have extended protection.
Okay, exactly what did you get from the French?
Oh, well, I mean, it was a series of things that happened. A man whose family had been involved in the founding of the French Republic and were very, involved with the French government on a diplomatic basis and reached out to me some years ago. And it was a series of conversations and meetings that happened both in the United States in Washington and out here at my farm in Virginia and in France. And the document is from Pierre Morin, M-O-R-I-N, with the Ministry of Defense in France. And it's basically sent to me, and it's dated in January of 2007, basically making the commitment to go on a long-term effort to make peaceful contact with these interstellar civilizations. And the attachment is a document of all the techniques and approaches that would be used in a Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind diplomatic meeting. And so this went on back and forth for a number of years until we finally went over to France, I believe it was in 2010, and did a demonstration, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, with the admiral and the officials there from the Ministry of Defense. This went on. They were wanting to learn how they might do this. Now, in the course of this, I know that the ambassador to the United States from France got a call from someone in our government telling them not to pursue it and to stop it. Mm. And they said, we're going to do this on French soil and you cannot stop it. Mm. So there's a huge story. I did an entire presentation in London last month about this that we hope to have up on the public as soon as we can get a copy of it from the people who hosted the event. But
that's the French for you.
Well, and what's beautiful is that the French actually committed and have made this commitment to go forward making peaceful contact with these civilizations. And this is an official, it's on the official letterhead and signatures and stamp of the Ministry of Defense. So this is such an important document just because of what it's committing to do, including making contact and identifying the source, the biological. All of this is an entire set of protocols that came with this letter from the Ministry of Defense, and it was followed up with this meeting on a 2,200-acre estate in Brittany back in 2010. So these sort of initiatives, I mean, it's a baby step, let's call it, by a major G7 country.
Well, maybe the French are scared. I mean, they don't have a great record of standing up to things, and maybe that document will end up in the French Museum of Surrender. Anyway, my guest is Dr. Stephen Greer, and we are talking of many things, very, very important things. We'll inquire about taking some calls. Stay right where you are.
Part of the Dark Matter Digital Network. This is Midnight in the Desert with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Well, all right. It's not usual to take calls for Dr. Greer, but we're going to do it. So, here's the way it works. If you want to call us, we have a national number, which is, pen in hand, are you ready? Area code 952-225-5278. Once again, you would dial 1, then 952-225-5278. If you want to reach us by Skype in North America, you call MITD51. Just go to add in Skype, you know, get Skype on your phone and add a contact. That's us. MITD51. In the rest of the world, outside North America, Canada and America, it's MITD55. MITD55. So in a few moments, we'll begin taking calls for Dr. Greer. I would appreciate your keeping them, you know, on this kind of night, this kind of breaking news, if you would keep them short, succinct, and ones that are able to be answered on the air, that would be really spiffy. Dr. Greer, welcome back. A couple things I want to touch on. Finish up with the French, if you can. I mean, were there any really serious revelations given other than sort of consideration of what would happen if?
Oh, sure, because when we did this demonstration of the contact protocols for them, they tracked objects going 200,000 kilometers an hour over the site. And there was all kinds of phenomena that happened, and this was incredibly important. And the idea that a major government's Ministry of Defense would say, look, we're going to break with the secrecy on this and actually try to openly make peaceful contact, that is an enormous step. I mean, it's hard to overstate how significant that is and then what happened during that event. By the way, the event was open to the public. They just didn't know that these Ministry of Defense people were there. And so there were about 60 people for this event over several days in Brittany. And, you know, it's a very historic event. I predict that it will eventually go down as one of the turning points for a major Western government to actually put their toes in to this subject, and, you know, and in an open way. This was this correspondence between me and my team and the Ministry of Defense, none of it was classified, because I'm a total civilian. I will not accept a classified briefing. So that's a very, very big step. And I think that we're actually have an initiative with another major government in the world outside the United States to carry it even to the next level. And so this is, you know, I always tell people, you know, there's the past, and then there's the now, but there's what are we going to create in the future? So creating an initiative like this in the future is, I think, where the action is.
Okay. You mentioned, look, I know that you are pretty well known for actually leading groups, you know, into a situation where you sort of get together and attempt to initiate contact, correct?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That was the founding project of our entire effort.
All right. Have you actually released an app that has anything to do with that, or what's the story?
Yeah, so if you go to our website, SiriusDisclosure.com, S-I-R-I-U-S, Disclosure.com, there's an app that's a whole training app that has all the protocols on it. It actually takes your smartphone and turns it into a magnetic field detector.
Really?
So if a craft is a, yes. It's a very sophisticated app. It's a very big file, though.
Well, that's all right. And what, wait, it's for what? Typically
for
Apple?
No, it's for, you can do it for, there's one version for Android and one for iPhones.
Okay.
And then there's, it actually takes you through a whole training program and of what the protocols are, the remote viewing techniques, the technologies you need on site. All this is all in this app. It's really amazing, the people who develop it. And then about a year and a half.
What is the name? I'm sorry. What is the name of the app you search for?
It's the ET Contact Tool.
ET Contact Tool.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, that's, you know, and then there's another one that's the ET Contact Network that will show you who's in your area wanting to do this. So we're just launching a series of events where we'll have these sort of contact global mass consciousness events on the same night every month all around the world, because now there are thousands of people doing this. And, you know, it is interesting. I got a report from a Croatian truck driver who was using this app and was doing the remote viewing and doing the contact protocols, and this ET craft materializes and floats right over his truck when he has it pulled over by the side of the road during a rest stop. So, yeah, some amazing stuff is going on, and to me, that's where the act is proactive, and it's now, and that's what's really, really exciting about it. And this other app, you can download, it'll show you where people are near you. And if people actually put an email address in there, or just create a new email address at some server like Yahoo or Google, people can contact each other, and then they can get together and go out and do this as a team of people, you know, 3, 4, 5 people at a time. Now, we have actually these contact teams all over the world now. Once we launch that app, I could actually monitor, and within hours, almost every country in the world had CE5 contact teams that were formed.
All right.
It's really amazing.
Give me the bigger picture about this, Doctor. In other words, it seems almost... But, all right, let me ask about the goal. When you have people either shining flashlights into the sky, getting together as a club or a group, and trying to initiate contact, it seems... I don't know. I want to hear about your goal, because it seems a trivial way to approach contact, or maybe it is the way. I mean, why is it the way? Tell me.
Because it's the people doing it, not some big government. It's fine to have the government, like this government in France, work on this, but I really think what these civilizations are looking for is that they're measuring the human response to their presence, and are they doing anything proactive and intelligent, or are they running around like a bunch of monkeys in the jungle?
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you get together in a group that is coherent, and then you have thousands of groups doing this in coherence, it sends a different message to them than sending up a weapon system to shoot at them.
There is
okay,
that.
So yeah. So I think that it's the purpose of it is to create interplanetary contact that's peaceful. That is the ultimate goal. Instead of interplanetary conflict that's been mismanaged for 60 years by the military-industrial deep national security.
Mm-hmm. All right. When these craft do show up to one of these and respond to one of these groups or individuals doing this, what do you think is the motive or the thinking on their part, or is that asking too much?
No, it's not asking too much. We've done this for 25 years, and it seems to be that if the group is doing this with the right purpose and not centered in some kind of paranoia fear, they're very interested in humans getting together in sort of a group consciousness to make contact. You know, people like, if you look at the work at the Peer Lab at Princeton.
Oh, yes. I look at it all the time.
Okay. There is an effect within the field of consciousness when people come together. So there's a certain effect from one person doing it. There's an exponential effect that's is much larger if multiple people get together in this state of awareness to do anything, but particularly in this case. And I think what we're getting, the feedback we're getting from the behavior of the ETs when they show up, is that they're very interested in humans going into this process together for creating a peaceful future together in space instead of a violent future. And I think that is really the core of the purpose of the CE5 initiative, the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind initiative, when humans, and by the way, we don't shine flashlights. We use all kinds of other electronic...
Whatever.
Yeah. And what's exciting about it is that it doesn't require a lot of equipment, and it doesn't require a whole lot of expertise, but you do have to learn the very first thing you have to understand is the concept of transdimensional physics and non-locality of mind. What is it that is phasing beyond the speed of light? Not just thought, but electromagnetically, all kinds of other dimensions. So you have to begin to understand that to do this kind of work, because otherwise something's going to show up and you're going to be completely WTF.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what in the world is this?
All right. Well, I definitely believe in the power of consciousness. I have experimented with it myself. And
right.
But what I don't know is what it is that we're talking to. I mean, you seem convinced that it's ETs. You know, you can mess with a Ouija board and also connect with something you might not be comfortable connecting with. So, you know, when you do connect with something, Doctor, are you sure that we're connecting with ETs?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, part of the training is to discern when it's something from, let's call it the spirit world, versus something that's transdimensional and ET versus, you know, your great-grandmother.
Mm.
I think, you know, there is a learning curve and a discernment, but there are very distinct attributes and qualities to these different kinds of experiences. And that gets into the depth of the training and experience that comes along with it. It is also important to realize that anything that is interstellar, if it's interstellar, by definition, it's transdimensional. And therefore, the way it may manifest around you can overlap with other types of phenomena like you're referring to. So you absolutely have to study that and understand the distinction. But, you know, that's something that can't be done in a five-minute question and answer.
All right,
period.
All right.
But it's learnable. This is not, you know, it's not like it's some secret mystery. It's something that's absolutely can be understood by almost anyone.
All right. Let's take a few calls. Stephen, hello. You're on the air with Dr. Greer.
Hi, Art. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I just want to say, hi, Dr. Greer. I want to say I'm a huge fan, that it's an honor to speak with you. I've listened to and watched about everything of yours that I possibly could, because you really present a uniquely comprehensive and palatable view on the UFO subject. It's unlike anyone else I've ever heard. I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are about last year's announcement by Lockheed that their Skunk Works division is developing a fusion reactor.
Yes, I've been following that, and I think they're just testing the waters to see, you know, what would be the response to releasing a, you know, tabletop fusion type reactor. Certainly they have much more than that in the Skunk Works. I know people who have worked in what's called the Cube. I don't know if you know what that is, up in the high desert of California. There's an underground facility called the Cube. I'm probably saying more than I should, and they certainly have fully operational transdimensional systems that, as Ben Rich said to Jan Harzan, who's now the head of MUFON, have the ability to take, quote, ET home. In other words, way beyond the speed of light. But I think when they announced that, it was a way of just testing the waters of the public, the scientific community, and others. Because remember what I said earlier, not everyone involved in these covert programs are lockstep together wanting to keep this secret forever. A lot of people want to see this change. And I think that's where there's sort of a behind the scenes progress being made that some people aren't really appreciating, but there's actually a lot of change happening in those projects. And I think the fact that they would announce that is something that where they were putting up a trial balloon, let's call it.
Okay, two things.
They certainly have more advanced technologies than a fusion system.
All right, Doctor, you said I'm probably saying more than I should. Are you in possession of a lot of classified information you're unable to talk about?
Yes. Only because, for example, this French document, I wanted to wait till the president of France, who at the time was there, Sarkozy, was out of office, and some of these other people were not in harm's way. It's the same thing when I didn't talk about my briefing with the CIA director for years until he was well out of office, because, you know, I was keeping a confidence. And there's a lot of other information. For example, this Powlick interview about developing the radio frequency chips that they've been putting in people.
Mm-hmm.
I had that for 15 years, and I wanted to release it. And when I was finally got this letter, I mean, it was sad that he passed away, but I, you know, and I had his death certificate, and I thought, now I can release that. So yes, I have a lot of information like that, and I have to honor. I always honor the confidence of when someone has told me or provided me with something, not to release it or not to attribute it to them,
mm-hmm.
For a certain period of time or what have you. And so I always try to honor.
Believe me, I understand that. Outside the country, to Peter. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, where are you?
I'm in Australia, Perth.
Okay. All right, Peter, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Greer, nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you.
It's a bit of a tough question for you. I've followed you for quite a few years, and a few years ago you mentioned that the crowdfunding was going to happen for a project where you were going to have all sort of webcams set up and everything so we could bust a free energy device out. And I just wondered what happened with that. When is this coming?
No, we had a crowdfunding for the film Sirius, which we hoped could create enough funding so we could create a lab so that would happen. But you can't open a lab with $100,000. You can't even buy the equipment.
Right.
So the what happened is that 99% of the people who saw the film Sirius, which, by the way, is on Netflix, and we went to the number one documentary on Netflix a couple months ago.
I thought it was excellent. I saw it.
But it didn't generate any real revenue. So what it generated enough that we have a $100,000 award or challenge to anyone who has one of these technologies that they can bring to us to be released open source. But to create a research lab and hire the people to run it and to do it. Now, I think, you know, if we had the resources of, you know, $6 to $10 million to open a facility, hire those people, we'd probably have something in a year and a half or 2 years. I'm pretty confident of that. But, you know, that's something we've never had the funding. We've never had anywhere near, not even 10% of that level of funding. So the problem is, if we were to get the funding to do that, everything happening in that lab, except the bathrooms, would be live streamed so that at the moment that we had an aha moment, it would be streamed on the internet and the data would be dumped on the internet so it couldn't be confiscated. In other words, it would be 100% open source. But we don't have the funds to do that. So what we've done instead is to create this award and challenge. If someone has something like this they develop, they can bring it to us. The criteria is very clear. And I would encourage people to read what's on the website, seriousdisclosure.com, because it's very clear that that's what we're trying to do. In the meanwhile, I mean, if there's a benefactor out there that wants to fund a research and development project to that amount, that'd be great. The public so far has not. And the film Sirius, while it was, it reached a lot of people, most of the people who saw it for free or for very little. It didn't generate any real revenue, certainly not, you know, in the upwards of $6 to $10 million.
Yeah, I saw it that way myself. On the phone, you're on the air with Dr. Greer. Hi.
Hi, how you doing, Dr. Greer? How you doing? All right, thank you for all you guys are doing. I got a question for you. Have you heard anything about an armada of motherships that pulled up behind the moon about 3 years ago and have been sitting there dormant for the last 3 years?
Doctor?
Yes, I have heard about that.
Wow.
I've seen no, in fact, I've had a couple of reports about it, but I have not seen any evidence for it. So I saw the same reports probably you did. Now, what I have that's more interesting, you know, I don't know if you remember the Cassini probe that went out to Saturn.
Sure.
Well, the Lockheed Martin executive, you know, Lockheed Martin is headquartered at outside D.C. there. Everything's there. And I was, this guy called me up. He said, look, he says, he saw the data that was scrubbed before the NASA people saw it of them imaging out by the rings of Saturn a massive mothership, if you want to call it that, ET, out by the rings of Saturn. And this executive with Lockheed Martin was way up there. And he said to me, he said, but the public is never going to see it, and nor is the rank and file of NASA going to see it. He said, but he absolutely knows that that has been imaged, and somewhere in the vault run by these corporate and intelligence programs are some pretty spectacular images of a massive. Now, my impression is that this was the same object that this Naval Research Lab scientist, Richard Foch, was informed about by a general at the Defense Intelligence Agency that was on the order of hundreds of miles or massive. I mean, we're not talking about a few thousand feet across, but massive object out by Saturn.
You know, now, it's interesting, Doctor. All these things you're saying tonight seem so much more digestible, if you will, in view of the breaking news we've got tonight. I mean, normally when a lot of people hear these things, they go, oh, come on. That big, really? Well, here we are looking at real news of something that big or bigger, and so it makes hearing what you're saying not so hard to hear.
Yeah, I mean, imagine an object that's, you know, bigger than the entire L.A. basin moving around out in space. So I think the other thing is that people have to understand what you're talking about in terms of technologies and so-called manufacturing. These things aren't made by digging up iron ore and smelting it and riveting it together.
Right.
All right, we're talking about a type of technological manufacturing where you create up a standing wave, I call it infra-ultrasound, that's transdimensional, and you actually accumulate the atomic and molecular structures from a template, an energetic template, and it materializes into 3D. So you're not... Yeah, and I understand this very well. I know guys who worked in labs in the very classified projects in the U.S. that have done this in human projects that are experimental. So when you're dealing with interstellar technologies that are transdimensional, you really have to completely, you know, it's not like building a full...
And go to whoever's next. Hello, you're on the air with Dr. Greer.
Hi, Dr. Greer. I have a question. I'll take the answer off the air. If there's so much of this, the government trying to cover this up for the purpose of, you know, keeping control over the world's economy and whatnot, what are the odds that this scientist from Penn State University who thinks that he found this megastructure is just going to be shut down and silenced anyway? Thank you.
That's a very good question, and I think Art Bell's referred to this before, is that we'll see if this story gets traction in the mainstream media, the mainstream media,
right.
Because I've seen so many stories that, well, wait a minute, let's just back this up. We did the National Press Club event. It was the biggest event in the history of the National Press Club. We had dozens of top-secret military people with their documents. And it got into the national media because they couldn't ignore it. There were 22 network cameras there, and then it was quickly taken down. And you have to ask the question, is the media really that free? Do we really have a free press? And I would say, no. I think, you know, Art Bell's show seems to be quite free. I haven't talked about anything yet tonight that they've shut the satellite down. But if you look at CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, I'm very skeptical that they're free agents. And I've had direct experiences with senior producers at these networks who wanted to cover some of these stories and were absolutely ordered not to do it. So the idea that we have a completely free press is just a myth.
Agreed. Agreed. All right. I cannot pronounce the name of the person who's calling. Meepo, maybe?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Where are you, please?
I'm in California.
California. Okay. Well, you're on my international line, so you lose. I'm sorry. That is for international callers only. William on Skype, you're on the air. Hi. Hello, William.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, well, get close to your mic and turn off your device so we don't hear that coming back at us.
Oh, it's turned off.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Art, for taking my call. And Dr. Greer, you're a hero to a lot of people. I just wanted to ask you, I contribute to the lab each month, and I just want to put out there that I think that if people really want something, they should also contribute to the lab, you know?
Right.
I don't know what your thought is on that.
Well, it's absolutely true, because if you look at just our, you know, our mailing list and network of a couple hundred thousand people that in my personal network, if each of those people did $10 a month in 3 to 4 to 5 months, we'd have enough to open this lab and put some of these geniuses that we've recruited out of the intelligence community to work. And I think, but you know, it gets back to this question of everyone's, and I thank you very much for your support. Everyone kind of wants someone else to do this, and it's sort of an area of interest and entertainment. But you know, I've met with a number of people who are multi-billionaires, and they're very interested in this. But when I say, hey, why don't you just take a flyer instead of putting $5 million on the craps table in Las Vegas, and just take a flyer on this technology? They go, no, it's too risky. I'll let someone else do it. So I think that the public, however, doing smaller amounts could do it if we could mobilize them. I've done all I can to. And by the way, we've made a lot of progress. But, you know, when you're talking about setting up a serious research and development scientific lab, you're not going to do that for a couple hundred thousand dollars. If you look at our budget, the electronic equipment alone is around around $500,000 just to get the correct very high voltage systems at the correct frequency so you can begin to experiment with these transdimensional zero-point technologies. So, you know, now, I will give it to you that there may be people out there who could possibly have one of these systems that they've been sitting on. If they do, they need to contact us, and we have an award for them, and that money is sitting there. It's $100,000. It's not much.
Doctor, I'm hearing more and more and more people talking about development of exactly what you're talking about. People actually working on models that they claim are either about to work or working.
Well, we just had this report out of India, Tiwari, who actually took over sort of Bruce De Palma's end machine concept and now has it under contract. The problem is, if you look at that, if you go to our website, you'll see there's a whole news article that was in the Economic Times of India, mainstream article, and it's claiming that this thing is almost 300% efficient, meaning three or four times more energy out than is going in because it's pulling energy from the vacuum of space-time. Well, the problem is they're pursuing a patenting route and an intellectual property route, which has always caused seizures to happen, the technology to be seized. And they also have it under contract with a large corporation in India, which never in the history of this technology has ever brought it out to the public. Now, I'm hoping India is different. I'm hoping they don't follow the pattern of the last 50 to 100 years of suppression of this technology. But I'm convinced that the way to do this is open source it. Absolutely open source it, get it out to the public, and also get the technology and the plans without any trickery or anything out on the internet to the public as soon as you get the results that are working.
I agree. That's the only way. Get it out there so widely that nobody can do a damn thing about it.
Right. You squeeze the toothpaste out of the tube so fast and hard you can't put it back in.
There you have it. All right. Very quickly, Twin Cities, I think. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering, as a former emergency room.
No, I don't think you need I don't think you need any treatment.
Well, he did drop a lot of names, but I guess when you're talking about this sort of thing and you're talking about something at this level, the names involved are going to be pretty big and are going to go clunk when they get dropped.
Hey, you know, if I don't name who the people are we dealing with, people are pissed off.
That's right.
Name dropping.
So no, you're right.
Well, screw you.
You're right.
I mean, that's my. You know, you can't win with a jackass like that who just called in.
I know.
Anyway, is there another question?
I know. No. He's more than done. And you're absolutely right. And that was absolutely unfair. So to heck with him. We're going to take a break. And you've got to imagine some people are just that way. But that's all right, because everybody listening knows some people are just that way. I'm Art Bell. This is Midnight in the Desert. Gotta keep that chain together.
Kingdom of Nai in the high desert. This is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please ring Art's Bell at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
And I forgot, we've got a first-time caller line. Keep forgetting to give that out. Area code 775-285-5800. You get that? Area code 775-285-5800. Dr. Stephen Greer is here on a pretty interesting night, I would say, all the way around. Do you get a lot of people like that, Dr. Greer? Obviously, just, you know, like coming after you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're used to it if you're in the public eye at all. So I sort of joke about it. You know, you just figure it's going to happen. You know, it's fine.
Of course it's going to happen.
I have a pretty thick skin at this point.
Got to have. Alexander on Skype, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing, Art?
Fine.
Oh, hold on.
Hold on?
Yeah, no, sorry. Speakerphone. I have a question for Dr. Greer.
Good. Go ahead.
So, basically that application you were talking about on the iPhone?
Yes.
Yeah, the app.
I'm understanding that it, basically you talk to ETs with it, or?
No,
it's a training program. But just go on the website. It has a whole description of it. There's a huge description at seriousdisclosure.com. It's if you have a computer, just log onto the site, and you'll see, search the front page, you'll see where the apps are, and go to it, and there's a big description. But it's a training program, actually.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness, if you're used to getting apps, then you already know you can read about them down below, so that's not...
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's try the first-time caller line. You are on the air with Dr. Greer. Hi.
Hi. This question is for the doctor.
Yes.
I'm curious more...
All right, turn off the program you've got running in the background, please.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It's all right. Now.
Yeah, I was wondering more about the cube. Sorry about that.
The cube, all right?
Yeah.
Well,
that sounded really interesting.
You know, the Lockheed Skunk Works are sort of a state-of-the-art facility up in the high desert of California near Palmdale, Edwards Air Force Base, and in that area.
Really?
And there's an underground facility. The more modern state-of-the-art facility is called the Cube, C-U-B-E, like a cube, and it's a massive cubic structure underground. It's connected through underground connectors to the Nellis Range, what the pop culture calls Area 51. Nobody really calls it that. And also, state-of-the-art.
I do. I call it Area 51. It's just over the hill.
Yep. And that's an older facility at Pahoot Mesa, Groom Lake, S4, S9. And then you have the facility outside Provo, Utah, the Dugway Proving Grounds, and that is also a really state-of-the-art facility, a much more important one than what's at Nellis. And there are underground connectors that connect these facilities. I always tell people, nothing really critical is above the surface of the Earth.
And the cube itself, Doctor?
So the Cube is a research facility. A lot of top scientists work in there for the Lockheed Skunk Works projects. Many of the projects are connected to advanced transdimensional technologies, ET technologies, researching and developing new systems, and it's very highly classified. I personally know an engineer who, at least as of a couple years ago, is working in that facility. And that's, of course, everyone knows the U-2 spy plane came out of the Skunk Works, but what they don't realize is that there's been a parallel project with Lockheed Martin and the Lockheed Skunk Works dealing more specifically with electromagnetogravitic, so-called anti-gravity technologies, transdimensional technology, all of those sort of programs. And so the more modern facility is called the Cube.
All right. That do it for you, caller?
Yeah, that was very interesting. My grandfather actually claimed that he once spoke to a he worked out in New Mexico. He studied the effects of space radiation on I believe chimpanzees. They launched them, literally took them high into the atmosphere. This is just an old story, but he picked up a scientist out of that, and he claimed that he did an autopsy on an alien.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. Many, many people make that claim.
Well, the New Mexico, that's another whole concept. A lot of people don't realize the Los Alamos facility is connected underground to the big underground facility that's at the Four Corners area. And when, back in the 80s, early 90s, everyone heard the Taos hum. They heard this humming sound.
That's right.
Well, that was Bechtel Corporation using these nuclear-powered tunneling devices to build the connector between the underground facility at Los Alamos to the Dulce Four Corners facility.
We were affected by that here, Doctor.
Yep, it was hitting bedrock, and it was just vibrating all through that whole area. Of course, a lot of people thought it was some mystery earth noise, and of course the people I know in the contracting laughing, where we're laughing up their sleeve, going, yeah, that's our nuclear powered tunnel. And it makes this massive, huge tunnel, and it moves at a fairly decent speed and turns the bedrock into glass, so like a classified,
wow,
liquefied rock. And that's how these connectors are built between these underground facilities.
All right, I punched the button on Weston, West Virginia, a little while ago. He's been nice and quiet. Hello. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to say that I really appreciate everything Dr. Reeder's done. I think his commitment and perseverance, and honestly just courage to, you know, go around and do everything he's done. But my biggest fear, if I was in his shoes, would be, what if he is part of the disinformation?
Oh, yeah. Really, interesting, actually, question. All right, caller. Let's take it from there.
Yeah,
doctor,
sure. I mean,
others have accused you of that in the past, and you never know, right? I mean, people listen to this kind of thing, and they go, what if this is disinformation?
Well, of course, I mean, and you can't prove a negative, can you? So
no.
All I can say is it's axiomatic. All I can say is that I try to get the best information I have from the best sources and provide that perspective to whoever I'm talking to.
Not the best disinformation.
You know, and there certainly have been some attempts at disinformation moving into my orbit, and usually we're able to uncover that. But we're pretty astute about this, and luckily the folks that have helped me with this have been some people who have been in these unacknowledged special access projects for many years and are pretty good at sniffing out a fraud or a disinformation packet versus something legitimate. But look, no one bats a thousand, and I have no doubt that, you know, but to the best of our ability, we try to only provide information that has very solid attribution and sources.
Fair enough.
And, you know, that's we do the best we can with a very limited resources, and really all volunteer staff, everyone who works with me, from IT people on down for our sites, it's all volunteer.
Right. Gotcha. James, you're on the air with Dr. Greer. Hi.
Roswell, Art. And,
thank you.
Dr. Greer. Hey, Dr. Greer, I do respect your work. I just have to take issue with a small thing that you said earlier. I worked for SAIC after I left federal service.
Right.
To ascribe a lot of competency to them when they couldn't even get Trailblazer under their grasp after spending $500 to $800 million on it is sort of nonsensical, because what you're talking about with them and other agencies kidnapping this lady and making her assume that she's been abducted sort of strains credulity. And I'll tell you why I believe this is because first off, they have to use contractors to do that. SAIC doesn't have that talent, and that's why during the outbreak of the global war on terror...
No. Caller, hold on.
You're mixing up a million different things because you weren't listening carefully. I didn't say SAIC was involved in that particular event. I'm saying that SAIC has had projects connected to the technology end of the UFO subject, and this I know to be a fact. I mean, Senator Barry Goldwater, who was friends with Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, who had been head of the National Security Agency, personally called Bobby Ray Inman when he was on the board of SAIC because of his involvement with this. So I don't know what your clearance was and what you worked on, but I will also say that when you look at hundreds of millions of dollars that go into projects that don't result in anything, a lot of times those projects are a storefront. If you look at the Disclosure Project witnesses, one of them worked for SAIC. She manned an office that had all kinds of money going into it. The money passed from her office to a black project, and they just ginned up fake reports and kept saying we had delays working on this and that and the other that they reported back to Congress. So there's all kinds of creative ways that corporations like SAIC, Lockheed Martin, Northrop, E-Systems, Raytheon, do it. And you know, having met with folks who've worked in those systems and in those kind of corporations, this is not speculation on my part.
No, I'm not, I didn't say it was speculation, and I understand the storefront thing. What I'm saying is, and I was listening carefully, it sounded to me that you were saying that they would have had to bring in contractors to have that kind of talent. That's what I'm saying.
I guess they did.
Sure, but that's what what they do. There's contractors to contractors to contractors. I mean, that's the whole game in Washington, which is why it's so damn wasteful. I mean, you know, when Rumsfeld said there's $2.3 trillion missing out of the Department of Defense budget, I recently saw a report in the Financial Times that it's now estimated $8.5 trillion. So where is that money going? It's going into this kind of multiple layers of bureaucracy till you really find someone who is doing something. And there's so much waste, graft, and corruption. By the way, and this is one of the things no one ever talks about, you know, they'll cut this program and this program and that program. They're not talking about the hundreds of billions of dollars being wasted and ripped off out of the contracting sector.
All right. To the next call. You're on the air.
Hey, Doctor. I'm a very avid fan of you. I'm a former UFO abductee. And I watched the William Powellick interview and several others. I believe you are so on to the right path. I was going to see if you found a correlation between what they call Morgellons disease, which is actually nanofibers or nanoparticles, which are using the same technology that Powellick used from the 2 billion transistors from Siemens. These actually have been modernized by DARPA and been released to the general public. I was wondering what your thoughts are on that program.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot of nanobiotechnology, and that's what this is really called, nanobiotechnology that's been developed in these classified projects. And remember, that Powellick was involved in projects in the 70s and 80s, so we're talking 30, 40 years ago. And technology doesn't stand still. So there have been multiple generations and development of these capabilities, and this is why a lot of people in the UFO world will come across a bit of evidence, and they're convinced it has to be, quote, alien. I'm going, well, wait a minute. Unless you've really drilled down on what the capabilities are within these high-tech covert programs, you really can't make that assessment, and that's why, you know, you have to kind of expose one with the other for it to make any sense. And these technologies that you're referring to have been developed on the nanotechnological level, where they're very effective at energy transmission, biological systems, all of this. And that's a lot of what they're using in these sort of artificial life forms that look like they're ETs, but they're not. And that's gone through many generations of development since the 60s.
All right. Kelsey on Skype. Hello.
Hey, how's it going? Hey.
It's going fine. What's up?
Honored to speak with both of you. I just have a question and a comment, and then I'll take myself off the air.
Sure.
Just the question was, I'm curious to know if either of you have ever heard of Billy Meier and what you think about him and his findings.
Billy Meier?
And my comment was that I think that maybe the reason that you as a host have a problem with things like shadow people and the Ouija board or whatever is because it takes a person who is extremely spiritual and morally sound to be able to, and have a lot of courage to be able to deal with having a positive experience with these entities, because if not, you're vulnerable to those negative entities. Sorry, I'm super nervous talking about it, but I think that's why certain people have the experience that they do, and they are more afraid of it because they don't.
All right, well, this is a subject, sir, for open lines or something between you and I. No problem. We can talk about it, but we've got Dr. Greer here, so.
Okay.
What do you have for him?
I've certainly heard of the Billy Meier case and looked at the evidence. I don't know. There are some people who ascribe to that, you know, evidence, and others who don't. What I've tried to do is find things where there's a pretty good provenance for it. But, yeah, I'm certainly aware of the Billy Meier case in Switzerland, and apparently he had some degree of contact that went on for some period of time and got a number of photographs of it.
Some of the photographs were pretty impressive. Some of the photographs looked like they, you know, you had a craft attached to a tree, frankly. So.
Yes, yes. And that's actually, there's a researcher I know that found that what happened was that many of, there were some real events happened, and then when they stopped, things started then getting staged a little, and that it kind of hurt the credibility of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I try to be careful with things where there's some question about that, as opposed to, say, you know, something released from a government or something that has had a really lot of solid information around it. And even then, you never know in this day and age with photographs.
All right, doctor, listen, it's been a wonderful show. The show is ending. I cannot control the clock. I wish I could, but I can't. So is there anything you would like to leave the audience with very quickly?
Sure. I'd like to invite people to come to our event in Washington on November 21st. It's going to be a live event and also a webinar. And if they want to find out about it, then go to SiriusDisclosure.com. I think it's going to be a big expose of how the secret government really works.
You're an amazing guy. Dr. Greer, thank you for being here. We'll do it again, buddy.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you're back.
Take care. Dr. Stephen Greer. All right, folks. What a night, huh? Got a lot of news to sift through and try to make sense of. But this was a night that I had always hoped would come. And I hope the story keeps building. By the way, I got a quick message that something, this supposed something is on the front page of Yahoo. Something about this recent discovery way out there that controls the sun was on the front page of Yahoo. So maybe this story is breaking wide. Everybody have a good night. Time zones from here to there and back. From Art Bell and crew, good night.